afternoon. I'm Tommy Bruce, and welcome to yet another web discussion with President David Skorton. Before we get on with the conversation, I just want to remind everybody out there that if you have two ways of asking asking questions of David, and one is by clicking on the little person waving at the bottom left corner of your screen right there, and that will indicate to us that you're ready to ask a question over the phone, or if you really prefer, just to type out your question into the chat box. I will keep an eye on that to make sure that we get your questions in real time. So without any further delay, since this is the, I believe, the 10th such conversation.
Maybe the 11th.
And maybe the 11th. You're right. We are on to 11th.
I think it's the 11th.
And, excuse me, I stand corrected. This is the 11th web conversation with David Skorton. Welcome to this hour, David.
And welcome, everyone. Before I talk with you about whatever you would like to discuss today, I want to take a chance to recognize Tommy Bruce and the excellent people in University Communications and his partners in Alumni Affairs within Alumni Affairs and Development, who dreamed up this terrific idea of online conversations or virtual town hall meetings or webinars.
Town hall meeting.
Town hall meeting. And, this is our 11th, and we've had them with alumni, friends of the university, all over the United States, internationally, and it's turned out to be a really terrific way to stay in touch with each other.
Absolutely.
And not a bad way of trying to move me into the 21st century. Job never completed. So just a couple of introductory remarks. We've had an extraordinary year in many ways, and I talk about it in that way because we're just about up to commencement. I'm going to the end of year organizational meetings of various kinds with the senior students and other students achieving advanced degrees, and Robin and I consider ourselves part of the class of 2010 because we came here in 2006, and so we 4 years with the class of 2010. Very, very moving and terrific season, spending more and more time with them before they become Cornell alums. Cornell continues to have very, very successful year in every way that you can measure it. 36,000 plus applicants are vying for 3,150 slots, and we've accepted the group, and we're waiting for their decisions about where they're going to go. We're very optimistic about what we're hearing so far. Big Red Athletics has had an unbelievable run for several years, an unbelievable year this year. Everything from the women's ice hockey team as runner-ups for the national championship and the longest NCAA women's ice hockey championship ever, fully through three overtime periods, and of course men's basketball getting to the Sweet 16, wrestling coming up second in the country, and many other very, very positive things. The faculty at the university continue to be recognized for their excellence. That may sound like just talk, but in the last several weeks we've had two faculty members elected to the National Academy of Engineering, as well as one of our trustees, Narayana Murthy, elected as a foreign associate. We've had four faculty, elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, along with Ratan Tata, our alum and trustee, as a foreign associate of that organization. And just a couple of days ago, one of our faculty was elected to the National Academy of Sciences. So they continue to be recognized. And you and your colleagues around the world have continued to be unbelievably generous and supportive to Cornell, with reaching a $2.7 billion mark on our campaign, also raising the annual fund to record levels yet again, even during the recession. So we're hugely, hugely grateful to you for being supportive of us and for all these good news things. Of course, we've had a very difficult year in other ways, most particularly the student debt that we have all suffered as a community, going from a lost graduate to H1N1 flu in the fall, to the recent suicides on our campus. We've pulled together as any family needs to, and I want to thank everyone out there, for the great support and advice and guidance that you are giving us through a most difficult time. I feel like we're turning the corner in every way, and I wanted to thank you for that. So thanks for indulging me for a few thoughts. Tell me, I'm ready to hear whatever our alums and guests I want to talk about.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go to the phones right now. And
okay.
I know that we have Kelly Brown is on the line,
Kelly.
I believe, and wanting to ask the first question. So Kelly, are you there, and are you? Can you join us?
Would love to. Thank you.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Thank you very much. Webinar topics to speak with some of Cornell Power Club members and higher. As the National Annual Fund Tower Club Chair, I personally would like to convey my all of the Tower Club donors who continue to support. It's actually my first webinar, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity all of you in person, or I guess a little bit closer in person than the notes that I sent. Generous support this year really is making a direct impact on students. The essence of Cornell brought to life. As a university, we have always been committed to making that your support really continues this legacy of making a noticeable difference. Not only have you renewed your commitment to Cornell, increased your support this year to ensure that our alma mater remains strong. Today, as the Tower Club National Chair, I'm also incredibly inspired by the work of our volunteers. You are a busy group in your own right, and I'm way by your dedication and your follow-through. Overall, I think the commitment and generosity of all the folks on the phone just give us a lot to be very proud of as a university and a lot to do. So thank you again for the opportunity to join this afternoon on the web. Forward to listening and learning, and I just want to let you know that all that you do for Cornell is really making a difference.
Kelly, what a generous thing to say. Permit me to thank you for all the ways that you have helped to steer this university as a member of the Board of Trustees, and everyone out there should know that not only has been hugely generous with her time in every way with this university, but that she is also a mentor to Tommy and me about how to present ourselves to the world. I think this kind of activity we're doing today is part of the train of things that we are discussing with Kelly. So Kelly, you're one of the people who deserves a lot of gratitude, and I want to share that with you publicly today. Thank you very much for all that you're doing and teaching me.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Sorry, I just said I'm happy to do it, so thank you.
Great.
So let me now turn to Carl Noose, who's waving his hand and ready to ask a question, I believe. Carl?
Yeah, thank you. Good to be with you here today. I'm actually an executive in residence here for 6 weeks in Ithaca, teaching in the law school and in the graduate program in real estate. It's been wonderful to be here. I have a few questions, but I'll ask them one at a time, so let other people in. But one thing I've done recently, although I think it's a year or so old document, is while I've been here, I've looked through the university master development plan with the whole East Campus concept under consideration and planning, and I'm wondering what the impact on that will be given the current economic reversal that we're all faced with and the university is faced with. And also, if you could comment, President Skorton, on the fact that we're adding, it was interesting to me, the concept over the next however many years, 10 or 15 years, is to add a great deal of space. We have such an impressive university in terms of its physical plan when I'm here and walk around. And it's interesting to me that I think the master plan indicated that space hopefully is going to be added in the future, but not necessarily a big addition in this, or maybe any addition to the student body in terms of numbers. Is that correct? And how does that all work?
These are great questions, Carl. Thanks, by the way, for teaching and for being part of the campus community again this year. Welcome back. The master plan for the Ithaca campus that you're talking about was developed, help me, Tommy, about 2.5, 3 years ago.
Completed
2 years ago. And the idea of that, and as you very correctly point out, Carl, that plan was developed before the economic downturn, but it's even more important that we have that now, because the idea of that plan is not to set out a rigid blueprint for exactly what's going to happen on campus, but instead to set out some principles and options for how we can, in a more thoughtful, planful, purposeful way, think together as a community about the future of the university's physical built environment and natural environment. And so, for example, some of the principles on which that was built, that was developed, were that we want to maintain sustainability as a very, very high priority. That as part of that, we want to maintain the beautiful green spaces in the university, that we want to continuously strive toward having the university be more of a pedestrian campus, where there's less use of vehicles on the campus as much as possible, that we want to make the campus as accessible as possible to all people with all capabilities of ambulation and other capabilities to be around our campus. And so those principles are even more important now as we make difficult decisions. Then you asked a really tough question, which we struggled with as the plan was being developed, and that is, what's the appropriate pace for expansion, and is it even appropriate to think about expansion in the university when the core mission, that is, of education, is not going to change very much in terms of the raw number of students being educated? And I think it is very important to think about some expansion in the future when it's possible. I'm going to tell you in a moment what conditions it will be possible. And why would that be? It's because the university's research mission and mission of scholarship and creative activity becomes more robust and more variegated as time goes on. And so, for example, look no farther than Weill Hall on Tower Road, the life sciences building where the Department of Biomedical Engineering and the Weill Institute is located, that those fields of molecular biology and biomedical engineering and translational science between some of the basic disciplines at Ithaca and their application in the medical paradigm in New York City, those fields were not even on our radar screen 20 or 30 years ago. And so it will be necessary, judiciously and carefully, to upgrade and add space to the campus to deal with, for the first point, the research mission, and secondly, the curricular mission evolves, and so the technology of teaching and learning evolves, and therefore the physical plan to deal with those technologies has to evolve as well. But we're in a new phase, and it's not a continuation of the construction pause that I instituted last fiscal year. It's a new way of doing business where we are not going to do any new construction projects unless we have the complete funding organized for it. In other words, philanthropy, and we have a solid schedule on receipt of the very generous payments on pledges. If some of it's going to come from the state of New York, we know exactly how much and where that money is going to come from. If some is going to come from monies that have been built up on campus toward a project, that it's enough to cover it. And because the university, like so many of our organizations and even our personal lives, became so over-leveraged, we're not going to leverage the university any further. And for the foreseeable future, I don't believe we should take on any more long-term debt, external debt, to build the buildings. And so within those constraints or spending guidelines, we are going to look for opportunities to upgrade and refine and in some cases add to the physical plant of the university. I hope it answers your question, Carl.
So first of all, I just want to acknowledge that KT Mao is on the line from in Beijing and trying to connect, and maybe we'll be able to get a question from him a little bit. In the meantime, I'll ask Bill Kingston if he would like to ask his question. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon. You touched on it briefly, President Skorton, but I wondered if you could give us a little bit more of a detail of the financial snapshot. We know that at the outset of the crisis here, there was some borrowing by the university. Prospects for the payback of that, and also whether any of this impact on the new financial.
Thank you very much for joining us. These are very insightful, important questions that Tommy will attest we are struggling with every day, literally every day. Financial snapshot. The university has a budget of about $3 billion, a bit over $3 billion. About one of those billions is in New York City at the Weill Cornell Medical College, and that budget in New York City is in balance. The other $2-plus billion, about $2.1 billion, is here in Ithaca, and that budget has not been in balance. It fell out of balance partly because of a greater dependence on endowment earnings for operating funds at Ithaca than in New York City, partly because the state support, which is all centered at Ithaca, has fallen back because of the state's very real revenue problems, partly because due to the recession, there has been some necessity, in my judgment, to slow down the rate of rise of tuition, to attenuate the rate of rise of tuition. And then finally, as you mentioned, we have opted to greatly increase the need-based financial aid programs at Cornell University for two reasons, two very different reasons, both very important. First, because it's the right thing to do to maintain fidelity with the founder's vision of Cornell, the any person part of the founder's statement. And the only way to do that is to make sure that the families whose students are currently on campus can continue to afford a Cornell education, which is an excellent education, quite expensive. And secondly, that students who are not yet at Cornell in prep schools and high schools and at other colleges and universities thinking of transferring can see their way clear to afford a Cornell education. So with a very substantial support of the Board of Trustees, we have taken some funds out of the endowment to bolster financial aid over a five-year period while we work with our alumni and friends to increase that emphasis on undergraduate need-based financial aid and our philanthropic requests and partnerships. And then, secondly, we have needed to do that because in terms of competing, sort of hate to use that word, but higher education is a very competitive enterprise. In terms of competing for the best students with the other Ivy Plus schools, the other Ivy League schools, we had really sort of fallen off the map in terms of competitiveness with those schools. And with our financial aid package, we're in the game again. Toward the bottom end of the lineup, to be very honest with you, most of the schools are still able to give more generous financial aid than we can, but we're definitely in the game now. So my commitment is not to step back from need-based financial aid at the level that we're doing it, and that's a big hill to climb for us. We need to find long-term sources to continue to be able to supply these open doors to students only based on their ability, a need-blind admission process, and allow them to dream of coming here and actually to come here and stay here and succeed here and graduate based on a robust financial aid program. So we're doing our very best to stay the course, and so far so good. Now, the last thing you mentioned is about the borrowing. I assume you're talking about our taxable debt proceeds in addition to the tax-exempt borrowing that the university has long used for construction projects and occasional other initiatives. We did opt, as many other schools, to sell taxable bonds year and a half ago. And we are using those proceeds for additional liquidity for the university. We used some of the proceeds to pay off some indebtedness that we had of other types and to get through a period in which we needed to have liquidity to operate the university. We were in better shape when we started that process of taxable borrowing than many of our sibling institutions because we are only about 10, 12, 13% of operating funds derived from the endowment earnings. Some of our peer schools, as I'm sure you know, are 35, 40, 45, 50% of their operating funds on endowment earnings. So we were able to have much, much less stress on liquidity than some of the other schools. But we did have our stresses, and the taxable borrowing helped us get through that. We're using some for liquidity now, and of course, built into our projections going forward and our firm financial plans, our plans on the books, so to speak, of course, to settle those taxable debt. Question, Bill.
Well, while we waiting for the next question, yep. I just want to, because I'm being asked, Al is communicating with
That's
us.
That's great.
And yes, we're seeing your text messages, so please ask your question when you're ready.
Yes, please. And welcome. I had the joy and honor again of visiting Beijing in the not-too-distant past. Just the other night, I was meeting, Tommy, with students in our CAPS program, China-Asia-Pacific Studies program. Tommy, a very modest person you may or may not know, is quite an experienced international policy person. And please remind me, was it your uncle?
That was my uncle who was the ambassador.
He reopened
relations with China.
Yeah. So it's a very strong interest of both of ours. And KT, it's a pleasure to have you here. If you want to email us or text or phone in a message, we'd love to hear from you. But in any case, welcome and thank you.
So while we're waiting for him, I have Robert Carr and Carl Nuss, but we'll go to Robert Carr first, and why don't you ask a question, and we'll come back to Carl Nuss after.
Robert Carman, and the question is relates, we've received some communications about the strategic plan. Could you comment on the status of the strategic plan and any decisions you have made as a result of those activities?
Yes. Thanks for joining us, Robert. The strategic plan, which will, I believe, be the first plan in quite a while on which we will actually make decisions and base initiatives and spending and hiring in the university, is between third base and home plate. It's baseball season, and the Yankees are doing okay. In any case, the strategic plan was put together by a faculty committee chaired by Ed Lawler, a professor and former dean in ILR, and seven other colleagues. Of the eight people who put it together, faculty colleagues, one from Weill Cornell Medical College and seven from the Ithaca campus. The plan in its iterations of drafts, we have opted to put on Tommy's Reimagining Cornell website. So we let the alumni and the community on campus and parents know that it's been out there for months, actually, in different drafts. And the last input that we got from you on the phone and from others was in the last several weeks. We are in the final process of incorporating the terrific input we got from on campus and off campus. And chairman of the Board of Trustees, Pete Meinig, organized a day-long retreat of the Board of Trustees in New York City. Gosh, can you help me? About three weeks ago. In any case,
just about
within the last month, and over 50 members of the Board of Trustees came to share their excellent ideas at that all-day retreat. So we're taking all that input and putting it together now. That plan has several planks in it. I won't try to go through all of them in the interest of time. But it focuses on faculty renewal and faculty excellence. It focuses on teaching and learning. It rejects the idea that teaching and research have to be at loggerheads at a university like ours. It emphasizes diversity of faculty, staff, and students. It emphasizes the importance of the staff, the non-faculty employee workforce. It talks about the importance of stewardship. I'm very proud to tell you that this plan as a major plank on stewardship of the university. In other words, that the way we steward the resources of the university financially, and the question that Carl Nuss asked earlier about the physical, the built environment, that the stewardship improve and be better at the university, that's just about to be shared. The final process is just about over now. Then the implementation phase. The provost and I will go to the deans and the vice presidents of the university in New York City and here and say, here's the vision, here's the areas of emphasis, let's find the lines of sight between your piece of the university and this concept of how the whole university is going to move forward. Now, while we're still in process in that stage, I want to remind Robert and others that two other things have been going on. One is that the provost assigned a 20 academic task forces last year, which reported in at the end of the calendar year 2009, and the provost made decisions on which of the many, many recommendations of those task forces, which ones to let lie for right now, which ones to study or explore some more, and which ones to go ahead and work toward implementation. And in Tommy's excellent ability to get this process much more transparent, both the summaries of the actual reports and the provost's responses and decisions have been on that website since, I think, December-ish or so.
Late November.
Late November. And then a third piece of the planning action has been that we have engaged with an international consulting firm to improve and streamline, is the word that Tommy likes to use, the administrative structures of the university to reduce the cost of operating and administering the university. So those suggestions and recommendations that were made in concert and consultation with this international consulting firm We are in the very final stages of making decisions and implementing those. The academic task force results are in motion, and the overall strategic plan is just about to hit the street in a final form. So thanks for the question.
And if I can put a plug at the end of Robert Carmen's question, is that the Ezra coming out in June,
yes,
will be focused on the strategic plan and sort of rolling it out.
But in the meantime, you can look on that website right now today, and it's on the left side of the thing.
Comment on it.
Reimagining Cornell.
Absolutely.
And it'll tell you chapter and verse what's going on. So we're going to be in a more planful environment than we have been and than most schools ever are.
So Robert Carmen, thank you very much for
your
question. Go back to Carl News, who want to have a follow-up question, and then I have some questions from China and elsewhere.
Good. Carl, you have a small follow-up question?
It's a different question. I can ask if there's someone else who would like to ask one.
Well, why don't you go ahead and I'll give you a brief answer, and then we'll go on to somebody else.
Okay. I'm just looking here. There's no other questions posted. That's why I'm mentioning it. But I'll warn you, it's a bit political, Professor Scorton, but some of the alumni, I'm involved in the California Alumni Club, and a couple of alumni have asked me, what's the purpose of the ILR school? I went to and met with a couple of ILR faculty. They've noted that the number of people who are in unions have gone from 32% to 8% of our workforce in this country. So I guess my question is, what is the current mission of the ILR school? Has the past mission changed or been made obsolete? Is it really a pre-law school now? Could you comment on that?
Absolutely. It's a terrific question, very timely. And under Dean Katz's leadership and under the leadership of those within the faculty ranks in ILR, like every part of this university and every part of every great university, things have evolved greatly over the years. Obviously, the world of work, the interaction between labor and management is still a big part of core competencies of that college. But really what ILR is, in my view, is one of the terrific applied social sciences institutions in the United States, where everything from economics, including but not limited to labor economics, and many other social science fields are studied, are taught, and the results disseminated broadly across the campus. Of course, it's true that some of the students in ILR will take that as a pre-law experience, as will students elsewhere in the university. But ILR is very vibrant, very alive, and very relevant to the world that we're living in. And, Tommy, we do get this question occasionally. Mm-hmm. As you move forward in realizing your total vision for these webinars, and I know that you are having had the athletic director, Andy Noel, on one of these, I hope we'll take the advantage soon of having some of the deans come and share their ideas. And I think having Harry Katz on here would be terrific, because I do get that question. It's a very logical question to ask, and I think we need to do a better job at our end. And, Kelly, I'm listening to you in this regard, Kelly Brown, of making sure that we have people understand what it is that we're doing in every corner of the university. Tommy's made such tremendous strides since he's been VP for University Communications. Here's an area that I need to get those folks out front and center on.
Absolutely. In fact,
thank you for the question.
Talking to a dean just a couple hours ago just about that. So let me take a couple of these questions that are in the chat box.
Okay.
One is from Ralph Willem, who says, well, first of all, thank you for your time. Having spent 4 days last weekend on campus, I was able to see the fences on the bridges surrounding campus, completely understandable, but also quite dramatic and sad. Can you speak to the options being discussed by your administration that are being considered as the longer-term solutions that might, in fact, replace the fences?
Well, thank you very much, Ralph, for being a part of this and for an insightful question asked diplomatically. I appreciate that. We've had a rough year on a campus that didn't suffer any suicides for over 3.5 years, and that in general has a suicide rate lower than the national average. We had quite a year this year of tragic loss of life, so many that we needed to treat the situation as what we in medicine call a suicide cluster or suicide contagion. And as I'm sure many have a 30-second tutorial, suicide occurs largely because of underlying mental health challenges, coupled with the ability to follow an impulsive act, and as some people have stated it, an unfortunate permanent solution to a temporary problem. And we needed to do something about this in the midst of a rising number of suicides on this campus. And so I appreciate your understanding that we had to do something decisive, and I did make the decision to put barriers up on the bridges, because that has been shown by study after study after study to reduce suicides, and they don't show up somewhere else like you might think logically. We also got our colleagues in Ithaca, with a special appreciation to Mayor Carolyn Peterson, who used her emergency powers to allow us to put up barriers on the city-owned bridges as well. Now, these are all going to be temporary expedients. The city barricades are going to come down on June 4, and as soon as we very possibly can, we're going to take them down on our fences, on our bridges as well. And so we are having a quick, very extensive campus-wide review of what we can do to be more supportive of the student experience, and especially stress on our campus. Let's face it, when I bragged earlier about having 36,000 applications for a little over 3,000 spots on campus, those students who make it through that difficult filter have had to be very competitive students, haven't they? They've had to be at or near the top of their classes. They've had to be at or near the top of the group of applicants in extracurricular activities, community activities, many, many other aspects. So they are people really who have lived a high-pressure life already in their tender years. Secondly, this is one of the best universities in the world, always ranked in the top 20 in the world. And just think about that for a moment. It's a place that got this good because people who are entrepreneurial and want to exceed the expectations in every aspect do succeed. And so the environment is one of striving for excellence, and it's one of pressure. Nonetheless, we need to look very carefully at all aspects of the student experience. And so in my April 5 column in the Cornell Daily Sun, I charged the Dean of Faculty, Bill Fry, you may think about him as the President of the Faculty Senate, President for Student and Academic Services, Susan Murphy, responsible for all of the out-of-classroom student experience. Thirdly, Ken Fox, Provost of Cornell University, who is responsible for the colleges and the curriculum and the research. Asked them together, Bill Fry and Susan Murphy and Ken Fox, to work with their colleagues across campus and with experts that we have already brought in from the outside to look at every aspect of the student experience. The faculty are looking at the academic calendar and grading and advising systems. And the student life people, the student academic services people, are looking at the Gannett Health Services, already considered a national model in mental health preventive and treatment services, but to see how much better can we do, how much more support can we levy to our students. And the administration of the university through Provost Fox to look at all other aspects of our support for students, including working with the faculty to look at the academic calendar and at advising and grading. And so we're in the midst of doing all of these things. Options that are being considered are very broad, and they include other methods of getting in contact with students, personal methods and technological methods, and they also include the possibility of altering the permanent architecture of the bridges, not by fences, but in some other way to make it hard or impossible to use the bridges as a method of suicide. So we're right in the middle of doing those things. I believe tomorrow, Tommy and others are sponsoring a public community forum here tomorrow, the 30th of April. We're going to have other forums where leaders of student, staff, and faculty on campus are going to interact directly with the experts coming to interact with us. And that's next week. And then a lot of those things are going on. And please stay tuned. In the caring community portion of our website, which I believe you can also get to from the webpage.
Absolutely.
From the front page, there's another one of Tommy's terrific innovations to allow you to follow along with us. So thanks for the question, Ralph.
Now we get to go to Casey Mao, who is asking if you could comment on Cornell's initiatives in China. Mm-hmm. Does Cornell have a China office? And he wants you to know he'd be happy to assist.
First of all, very, very much for taking the time, and I'm just trying to think about what to do in Beijing.
12 hours ahead.
It must be 2 in the morning there.
Something like that.
Thank you very, very much for your devotion to Cornell to be up at such an hour. Cornell has 100 years of interaction with China or Chinese students. Of course, over 100 years of Chinese students coming to the Ithaca campus and becoming part of our family, and decades of us working with Chinese colleagues. So, yes, we're very engaged with individual universities, with student exchange programs, with the CAPS program that I mentioned, and so on. Right at this point, we don't have any plans for a campus in China. We do have program offices related to the CAPS program, I believe, and Tommy will check me and make sure that this is accurate, and we'll get back to you, KT, if it's not accurate. But I think we have offices at Peking University.
Right, it's on the campus.
On the campus of Peking University, related to our direct curricular interaction with them in the CAPS major. And we'd be thrilled to keep in touch with you. We have a new person in alumni affairs, related to alumni affairs in the international scene. And perhaps Tommy could get Amy's email address out to the whole crew. And I had the great joy of traveling with Amy in Beijing in the not-too-distant past, and she's focusing specifically on our very, very large and growing international alumni pool. Tommy and I, just in the last 48 hours, were looking over some of the statistics on how international Cornell is, and we're approaching 20% of the campus, almost 40% of the graduate student population, and among the most internationals in the country of our size. So, very important to us to maintain forward momentum in our long-time interactions with our colleagues and friends and alumni in China. So, Tommy, if you could share Amy's email with everybody, that would be terrific. Thank you.
So, staying on the international scene,
yes.
We have a question from Bob Hurd, class of 61,
okay.
Who would like to know, how can Cornell make the international development activities of units like CFAD,
mm-hmm.
International Nutrition, International Agriculture, central to the work of the whole campus and more closely allied with international studies?
So first of all, Bob, thanks for being with us. For those who don't know what CFAD is, that acronym stands for the Cornell International Institute on Food, Agriculture, and Development. It's a fabulous, I believe, one-of-a-kind structure. Run very skillfully by Alice Pell, who is also currently the Vice Provost for International Relations, and a very, very big part of the worldwide international scene in agriculture and food and development, perhaps the most important aspect of international development, along with health support. It turns out, Bob, happily, very happily, that the whole sphere of what the strategic planning Advisory Council has called public engagement. The whole sphere of that is front and center in the strategic plan. The idea of bringing together the public engagement and what we sometimes call outreach, Tommy uses the phrase that Cornell is the land-grant university to the world, it really is, that we are going to work specifically and in a focused way to bring together those public engagement activities and that passion for learning and understanding and helping our neighbors from Tompkins County to the other side of the globe. We're going to link those even more tightly with the curricular and research mission of the university. I hope that's a fair enunciation of what the plan says. And Bob, if you had a chance to look at that draft strategic plan outline, go on the website and on the left side where there's a lot of those links, Cornell leadership and so on and so on. There's a reimagining Cornell, and within that area, I believe, is where you can find
exactly.
The strategic plan. And there's a whole chapter in the outline plan. It's about pages long, the whole plan, 6-0. You can find a chapter on public engagement that talks about this linkage and it talks specifically about international activities. So, yes, that passion for international activities and development is alive and well at Cornell and is part of our present and future, as well as our past.
I think as an example of that passion, Haiti was a recent flashpoint in our lives in which many parts of the university came together in sort of a very passionate and impactful way.
Yes. In fact, you may know, forgive me if you already know this, but just in case you don't, Dr. Jean Pape, P-A-P-E, a Haitian gentleman, who got a medical degree at the Weill Cornell Medical College, went back to Haiti and started with others the first HIV/AIDS clinic before we even called the disorder AIDS. And it's called the GESCIO. It's a French acronym. Tommy, being fluent in French, could I won't embarrass myself by trying to say it. And that's been going for going on 31 years, I believe. It's the 31st year. And a staff of over 300 people. We lost, tragically, four of our staff during the earthquake in Port-au-Prince. But we are rebuilding that capability, and we are going to be at the service of the Haitian people to be a strong partner in planning the redevelopment and rebuilding of Haiti as we are asked to do. Alice Pell, who I mentioned just recently on the Ithaca campus, and Warren Johnson, who is the director of the Global Health Program at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. Together, at my request, they have brought together a real distinguished faculty group, advisory group, representing both campuses with expertise in infectious diseases and city and regional planning and engineering, agriculture and nutrition, to be at the service of the Haitian people. So, Tommy, thank you. What a terrific example, and thanks very much for the question.
So, as we wait for any questions that people want to ask at the moment, I see Bill Kingston is waving his arm.
Didn't have to wait long.
Go ahead.
Okay, just to turn to another subject a little bit, could you comment on some of the joint activities between the Ithaca campus and Weill Cornell, the status of biomedical engineering that might be emerging as a university?
Bill, I'm in the faculty in biomedical engineering, very proud to say that, and I've been active in biomedical engineering elsewhere for over 20 years. Cornell has put together and is refining and growing a very, very distinguished Department of Biomedical Engineering. We do not offer a major yet, but it's under discussion, as it has been when Ken Fox was Dean of the College of Engineering and now Provost for the University in Ithaca. The department is very strong already and becoming stronger through recruitment, retention, and focus on curriculum and research. It is, as you very insightfully comment, Bill, the one of the major bridges between the Weill Cornell Medical College and the Ithaca campus. Not the only one by any means, but a major one. And it's very active. We have had a program for a while of, especially before the recession hit with such ferocity, of seed grants on campus given to collaborations between the two campuses. We've had a terrific return on investment in every way that you can imagine. Student teaching and new grants and discovery of knowledge and dissemination of knowledge through papers in the best journals. We've had a tremendous return on that investment in seed grants to bring the two together. The university has refined a fleet of buses, bus service between the two campuses, so-called campus-to-campus bus. I take it regularly, and it's a very, 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 very easy way to get between Ithaca and New York City. To my knowledge, only once in the last 6 years has a bus not gone because of weather, so very, very reliable. More and more attention being paid to the housing and administrative and other barriers to having students and advanced trainees and postdocs actively go back and forth. I'll plug my wife's efforts in this regard. My wife, Professor Robin Davison, is a professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine in Ithaca and at the Weill Cornell Medical College, and as Tommy knows, she's way ahead of me in terms of this video telecommunications. She has a lab in both cities. She has grants in both cities. And she has every other day a video teleconference between the two labs. She goes, as I do, back and forth between New York City and Ithaca. And she has taught me a lot. I've learned a lot about what we need to do to make that a more effective and possibly growing system. There's no question that there are challenges housing on the Upper East Side of Manhattan is a big challenge for the people who are there all the time and for people who are there part of the time. But we are slowly but surely overcoming those challenges and more activity between the two campuses. So thanks for the question, Bill. Two good questions.
In fact, I would just add that once a year, as you know, there's the highlight of the meetings in New York City.
Yes.
Are the presentations by the joint team from both campuses.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is a real crowd pleaser.
Yeah, and that's a joint meeting of the Board of Trustees and the Board of Overseers of the Medical School.
So while we're waiting for some questions, I was wondering, as we sort of come to towards the end of this presentation, if you could talk. You talk to students a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You meet with them in your office.
I go to
assembly meetings and so forth. What is the your sense of what's on the mind of students these days?
Well, this is a great question, Tommy. As you know, I consider that my number one job here is to do what I can to get to know the student body and to ensure a better and better and better and better student experience. And I try to do that by, as Tommy said, working with Vice President Susan Murphy on having periodic office hours, you could call them, in my office, meeting with students in open meetings that Tommy organizes and Susan organizes, meeting with the student leadership. I'm meeting with the student assembly, the undergraduate student leadership, later this afternoon. And having students over to the house for dinner. We had seniors from Becker House, where Robin and I are fellows, recently. And going to dinner where they live. I was at Telluride House recently. And in every way that I can, let's make a long story a little bit longer, to get to know what the students are thinking. To really know what the students are thinking, of course, you have to ask the students. And when I ask them, they are concerned about the fact that their tuition is still going up, albeit at a somewhat attenuated rate. They're concerned about the fact that faculty hiring is slower than usual and their classes are still the same size. They want to make sure that they have access to the faculty for education and for advising. And the faculty numbers are still very robust, but faculty are retiring and we are hiring at a lower rate. And we're going to turn that around in the next year and a half. But it has been a problem because of the recession. No question about it. By the way, as an aside, that's why your continued support of not only need-based student financial aid, but of support for faculty is so absolutely critical. Because right now, campuses all over the country are having trouble with their finances. That's a chance for Cornell University to be very competitive in the hiring pool. And then finally, I would say that the students are concerned about the job market, especially seniors, and wanting to know what we can do as a campus to help them get on to the next stage of their lives. And we're working very hard on that through career services, through many of the Cornell networks of alumni in various areas. And so far, of course, it's still a struggle. Better this year so far, in my estimation, was a year ago.
Thank you. Bill Hazard is waving his arm. Bill, would you like to ask your question?
Bill, you there?
Bill?
Can I ask you a question
Absolutely.
While we're waiting here? Tell us a little bit about your vision, because you're so creative and really visionary about these things. Where can you take this technology so that we can reach out even more effectively? Tell us some of the things you're thinking of doing beyond our continuing monthly webinars.
Well, I mean, answer this in 30 seconds, but
what you ask me to do all the time.
One of the things that we've been working very much on, and I encourage everybody out there to go and experience this, but we've created something called Cornell Cast,
mm-hmm.
which is really building on this idea of webinars. And you can go to cornell.edu, and at the upper left corner of the under the panel picture, you'll see there's something that says, now on Cornell Cast. And if you go to this site, from now on, you will come to a place where we are actually streaming documentaries, mm-hmm. conversations, different kinds of shows every day during the day, 24 hours. And in fact, in a way, it's a premature, sort of primitive version of television, and we're sort of going that way. We've started shows that we have something called Sidelines, and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. we have an interview of a coach,
mm-hmm.
Coach of the Week. We started something called Staff Notes. Staff Notes is Thursday at 1 o'clock. And the point, and that's every Thursday, and then we have webinars that are going to come up with deans and other of our academic leaders. I go to departments pretty much every other week or so and meet with individual faculty members to talk to them about how they want to use this medium in order to get their presentations out. So when you go there, you'll see that there's a whole program with a very ambitious undertaking. And frankly, it's a wonderful place where whatever it is that you want to do in terms of consuming Cornell information, which however you want to do that, you can do it from that site.
Well, I want to endorse this. It's terrific, and it's not a primitive thing. It is like a set of shows. There's a schedule. It's easy to follow the schedule. It's easy to get on and watch the Cornell cast. And like anything, it's important to look ahead and find out what you want to see, and look topically to see what's there. So CornellCast is very, very impressive. We're being passed a little message here.
We're passed a little note.
See, we don't have those things in our ears where they can just tell us stuff.
This is to Bill. Bill Hazard, if you want to ask a question, I see you've been trying to get on.
You have to type it in.
Type it in, and I'll monitor this. We have a couple minutes left, and so
literally.
If there's one question that anybody wants to ask, please go ahead.
Yeah, Bill, I'm sorry, but if you could type that in there, that would be terrific. Or if this doesn't work out, Bill, send us an email after the fact. Oh, he's doing it.
He's typing his question right now.
Okay, great.
But I think that just to give him a few minutes, one of the things I'd just say is what makes this my job really interesting is that there's so much at Cornell University that is immediately relevant to so many people.
To so many people,
so many places. That playing with this new technology to find ways to create these connections is a lot of fun.
If you have ideas out there about ways that we can use this same technological setup,
I'd love to hear from you.
We'd love to hear. We'd love to learn from you. I mean that very sincerely. Tommy and I are very responsive to guidance from our alumni because this is for you. This is really for you. I want to make sure that you can get the access you need to information about Cornell. Oh, okay.
So we have a question from Fred Young.
Okay.
Who's waving his arm. Please go ahead, Fred.
David, we had a pleasure of meeting last September to talk about Caltech Atacama Telescope. I know times, but there was a pause in the questioning, and I thought I'd just bring up the subject and ask about Caltech Atacama Telescope in Chile.
Oh, okay. Thank you for. I'm embarrassed to tell you I'm not up to speed on where that is right this minute, I always want to be honest about that. Fred and I did have a conversation about this, a very exciting project. Do you want to tell anything about that?
Well, I can say that Martha Haynes I believe we're talking about the Atacama Telescope.
Yes, absolutely.
Has just returned with Ricardo from a trip to the site, and we're having a meeting in the next couple of days to talk about the communication side of that, and so things are moving forward in a very interesting way.
Why don't we promise you, Fred, that we'll get back to you by email? I'm sorry I can't answer that one off the top of my head.
Absolutely.
And Tommy, will you take responsibility for that?
I'll make sure I get the information to you, but I know that there's a lot of exciting things going there, and it's very high on the astronomy's agenda. And so now this brings us to the message from Bill Hazard hasn't appeared. Bill will reach out to you to find out what your question is and make sure that we get an answer to you. As usual, we're delighted that you were able to join us for this conversation with President David Skorton. We look forward to the next one, and in the meantime, we wish you the best.
Thanks so much for joining us and for being part of Cornell. Thank you.